Yes? Well, there are two ways to be original. You know, I criticized earlier the modern conception of originality. We're going to say, we're going to do, we're going to think something entirely different from other people. I think only a hyper-mimetic world, obsessed with not imitating, can come to such a point. Therefore, indirectly, in my view, this concept, the modern concept of originality, which was born with Romanticism, in a way testifies to the mimetic nature of our world. Imitation, mimesis, and so forth is the bad word par excellence in our world, in culture. If you bring it in, it's like doing something disgraceful, not being polite. You see what I mean? Only originality. So there is another notion of originality, which I think is more profound, and which is not really mine, which is going back to the origin and changing it. What Christ is doing is going back to the bad origin, which is violent, and making it not non-violent by suffering the violence willingly instead of inflicting it. So this origin will not immediately change everything, but will slowly act like that transformation I was talking about, and changing our world in a gradual fashion, which is, I think, what is happening today, faster and faster. I don't know if I'm answering your question. Yeah, well, today, if you take the most, the greatest violators of human rights, you know, they always speak the language of the opposite of what they're doing, which the Romans would not have done. If you had gone to a Roman Pontius Pilate, you know, or any Roman functionary, and told him, I've been victimized, therefore I have rights, he would open big eyes and would say, are you a Roman citizen? You see what I mean? But he would not even understand, he would not even laugh. He would not understand at all what you're talking about. So we live in a world, in a way, where today even the powers have learned that you must speak the language of victims. You see? And very often you speak it half sincerely. What is hypocrisy? Hypocrisy is not the same thing as lying. There is the truth, and there is a lie on the other side, and maybe there is hypocrisy in the middle, when you believe your own lie. And I think most people believe their own lies. Most people are sincere. You know, sincerity is the cheapest good in the world. Only our enemies are insincere. But we all are always sincere at all times and have never been insincere, really. You see what I mean? So it's the same thing, again, as the unconsciousness of scapegoating. It's always a question of turning back against oneself. We are also the world of self-examination. You see what I mean? We are often criticized for that. We are presented precisely the idea of Nietzsche that our culture is sick. It's because of self-examination. And being the son of a Protestant minister, he saw Protestantism as the arch perversion of that, you know, Christians, the most perverse form of that Christian sickness, which is constantly asking oneself if I'm doing the right thing. And undoubtedly, there are aspects which may become neurotic and so forth, but fundamentally, it's the greatest thing in the world. And today, no one dares defend it. It can be corrupted in a certain way, but a society in which people are able to ask this question is infinitely better than any other in the past. You see? And today we come to the point where we do not dare say this anymore. That regardless of how bad the perversions of that principle are, it is the greatest principle in the world. And there is no doubt that no form of paganism will instill that into you. Yes? The way I think the New Testament has to be read is closer to Talmudic, Midrashic interpretation than anything else. You know, because in order to see this, you have to give some examples of it, you know. And I don't know it as well as I do. But I remember one thing which enlightened me greatly about the sacrifice of Abraham, you know. Sacrifice of Abraham is a non-sacrifice of Abraham. In Jewish terms, the binding of Abraham, the Akedah, you know. And finally, Abraham, you know, finds the ram, which is caught by its horns in the thicket and sacrifices the ram. Now, there is some Midrashic Talmudic comment on that. Oh no, I'm afraid I'm wrong. But it doesn't matter because it's the same style. And that shows I can be ecumenical. What I'm saying is in the Quran. It's in the Quran. But Mahomet, you know, in a way was a Talmudic interpreter. You know, in the Quran, there are these words which are very strange, which says the ram which was sent by God to Abraham is the animal that Abel had sacrificed. Abel was a sacrificer of animals, whereas his brother Cain did not sacrifice blood. So, you know, you see this and you say, how mad this is. But if you think in terms of sacrifice, you understand very well. Abel does not sacrifice his brother because he sacrifices animals. They are a substitute for man. And this is the same thing in the case of Abraham. Cain may be one of these people who think you can do away with sacrifice immediately, you know, without going through the historical stages. And therefore he ends up killing his brother. Therefore the idea that the animal is the same means the animal has the same function in both instances. But this is very much in the style of certain Jewish comments, you know. For instance, that's another example that had impressed me. I see mimetic rivalry is present behind all discourse on sacrifice, all the great scenes of sacrifice, you know. And still, the question of Abraham, there is a Jewish comment saying that while Abraham and his son were climbing Mount Moriah, supposedly to have Isaac sacrificed, the two servants who were there, who were the favorites of Abraham, were fighting each other, being mimetic rivals, about who would become the inheritor, the missing son. You see what I mean? So this comment puts mimetic rivalry there, which doesn't seem to be there. And that I find absolutely marvelous. You see what I mean? The sense that it has to be there, because that's what sacrifice is about. But of course, you have to go through, you know, it's never theoretical. It's just, so I would say we have to understand these things better, because usually they have a profound meaning in terms of human relations. And this is what the philosophical Christianity of the Middle Ages or today, they don't understand that these things are always meaningful in terms of human relations, which means ultimately in terms of love or hate, which brings you to prayer.
Exactly. The state in which the knowledge disappears.
It's less important to interpret the text than ultimately to love your brother. But if you love your brother and if you enjoy reading text at the same time, which is not very important, but and so forth, you probably have more of a chance to give ultimately the right interpretation, the charitable interpretation, as the Christian would say, than if you hate your brother. Because if you hate your brother, you have something in your eye, some scandal, some obstacle, which prevents you from seeing the truth, which is John, which is very Talmudic too, in many ways. Well, I don't really think it has a revelation in a Christian sense. I think it's a different historical stage. My You see what I mean? I don't know it enough to pass judgment, you know, and one should be sure to avoid judgment. But I think that the Christian revelation, in the sense of the passion, in a sense, is once and for all. It's there, you know. And I'm sure that in the Quran, there are aspects of it which are taken into account. And that's all I could say.